The following paid program is sponsored by Prairie Fire Communications. Opinions expressed do not necessarily represent those of staff and management of WRMN Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Freedom Rings. I'm your host, Kenneth John. With me is my excellent producer, Mike. How you doing?
I'm pretty good for a Monday. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. It was a fun game to watch yesterday, huh, with the Bears?
Oh, all those points scored? How could it not be a fun game? And we won, so.
And we won.
Yep.
And Minnesota just turned the ball over and over and over again.
Uh-huh.
That was a gift for the Bears.
It sure was.
It was a fun game. All right. Well, Orton is really becoming a great NFL quarterback.
Becoming a great quarterback. He was a quarterback before we let Grossman back in.
Well, that's true. I mean, his record was, 12-6?
Yeah. Yeah, and he was the one who took us to the playoffs.
He didn't have this super strong arm. Just everybody just kind of dissed him. And
yep.
Well. Despite Orton, the Bears are winning. Well, now, now some are saying that because of Orton, they're winning.
Well, I don't know about that. We're kind of a lackluster division. I think 8-8 is going to win our division.
That's true.
Uh-huh.
There's no question about that.
Uh-huh.
But at least they're fun to watch. And I guess the defense, I think they're just getting old. I think that's what's happening.
It could be. And another note, and I don't want to talk about too much football, but if you look at a team, let's say the New England Patriots, who lost their quarterback and now they're the worst team ever, I don't want that ever to happen to the Bears. So I don't want to put our whole investment into one guy. Let's get a good quarterback and give up everybody else because guy gets hurt and you're done.
Better have it as team effort.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. It is a team sport.
So, all right, let's move on to the stupid regulation of the week. Actually, this is not a regulation. This is just a really stupid move by the stupid party. Stupid party being, of course, the Republicans.
Uh-huh.
And it just amazes me how I really think they have the Republican leadership, the national Republican leadership, has a disdain for the intelligence of the average American voter, I think. And they just keep on coming up with these moves that anybody with an ounce of sense knows is just going to turn and backfire on them. The latest one is, in Michigan, evidently, there was this move to make sure that people who had their houses in foreclosure and lost their homes wouldn't be able to vote.
Really?
Yes.
You're kidding me.
They actually have come up with a list of foreclosed, the Republican establishment of Michigan connected with the, you know, voting registration and election judges and that sort of thing. They've come up with this list, and if you're foreclosed, you're not living in your house, and therefore you don't have the proper address or whatever, therefore you don't have the right to vote.
Well, that's insane.
It is. It's insane. Now that it's got national public media attention, they're backpedaling on it. And they're saying, of course, as long as you're registering, as long as you're foreclosed within 60 days and having to re-register where your address is, you're going to be able to vote. I guess that's what the law is. If you've moved within 60 days, then you still can vote in your own old precinct.
If it's over 60 days,
you're supposed to register. And that makes sense. But I don't think that's what they were trying to do at first. And evidently they thought, well, anybody that's foreclosed, they're going to vote Democrat. I guess that's what they're thinking.
Okay.
But they don't look beyond their nose on this issue. What kind of public relations disaster it would be for them, for the public to find this out.
Were they making a foreclosure like a felony charge now? Is that why they can't vote? You know, come on now.
It's just one more stupid thing. Just like these they got these robot phone banks by the Republican National Committee. These robot phones that are saying, you know, how Obama has this connection to William Ayers, blah, blah, blah. People don't care about that.
Mm-mm.
What about, I mean, I'm not going to vote for Obama, so don't get me wrong, folks. But Obama's not going out and mentioning the guilt by association that McCain had with Keating and the Keating Five. You know, I
don't know what to say about, you know, I have no idea.
It's amazing to me that that the Republicans try to pull this. And
it's amazing to me the two guys that we have running, the Republican and Democrat, that's the best we can do. That's the best we can do as a country is McCain and Obama.
It's pretty sad. But of course it's not the best we can do. There's other choices. And even though I'm not a Bob Barr fan, I am a libertarian, and I believe in libertarian ideals, I'm going to vote for libertarian ideals. And I will vote libertarian, even though I don't like our standard bearer.
Okay.
But it's the ideals I'm going to vote for, and hopefully, I really do. I think that the polls are going to even widen by Election Day. The McCain campaign has made so many really stupid mistakes that I just think things are going to get a lot worse for him. And hopefully people who decided, the lesser two evils is John McCain, maybe they'll consider voting Libertarian this time. Because as you said, you would think that the Republicans could come up with something better. But they don't, because they're really devoid of any really new ideas. The Libertarians are the ones who were right about the war, who foretold what was going to happen with the financial collapse, and they have the ideas to fix the situation. So, folks, even though Libertarians are going to win this time, the more votes they get, the more the politicians sit up and take notice. And if you keep on doing what you've always done, you'll keep on getting what you always got. So it's time to really vote differently. That means not voting for these major parties that have stolen the election for so many years through ballot access laws.
Mm-hmm.
So today we will, we're going to have a guest today. It's going to be really interesting, I think. It's Dr. Paul Hine, and he writes for LouRockwell.com, and he's been writing about the bailout and taxes and such, and is, to me, obviously a libertarian, so it should be a lot of fun today. We will introduce him right after these messages.
Are you politically homeless? Are you tired of being taxed and regulated by the Democrats and regulated and taxed by the Republicans? Would you like to pursue your own dreams without the interference of government? Well then, America's most successful upcoming party, the Libertarian Party, is your political home. The Fox Valley Libertarian Party is your local libertarian group working hard to restore the freedoms our country once held dear. Yes, you can fight City Hall and win. We did. Find out how. With your help, we will make the 21st century the century of liberty for all. We hold monthly meetings at Baroni's Pizza, 3 Lakewood Plaza, one block west of Route 25 off of Bessinger Drive in Carpentersville on the last Wednesday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m. Call 847-426-1974 for more information. That's 847-426-1974. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
You get what you pay for. Efficient, high-quality service from Perfect Painting and Decorating. In business under the same name since 1975, Perfect Painting and Decorating supplies superior service for both interior and exterior painting, decorative finishing, wallpapering, plastering, drywall and taping, and wood refinishing. For your decorating needs, Perfect Painting and Decorating can custom tint right on the job site. Imagine no interruptions, thorough preparation, professional tradesmen, top-of-the-line materials, meticulous cleanup. Get the job done right the first time. It may cost a bit more for quality, but it's worth it. For a free estimate, call Perfect Painting and Decorating at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974. You'll be glad you did.
Hello, friends. This is Kenneth John, and Freedom Rings need your help. I would like to get back to a two-hour show, but that costs money. You can help by contributing to the Heartland Institute, Illinois' own libertarian think tank, with a tax-deductible contribution. The Heartland Institute is an independent, nonprofit research organization in operation for 17 years. Joseph Bast, Heartland's president, is a frequent guest on this program. 90% of what you contribute to Heartland comes back to Freedom Rings to pay for this ad. By contributing $25 or more, you will receive monthly publications including School Reform News, Environment and Climate News, and The Heartlander, the Heartland Institute's monthly newsletter. So please call 312-377-4000 to contribute and be sure to mention Freedom Rings. That's 312-377-4000. Or you can contribute by credit card on the internet by going to Heartland's website at heartland.org. Again, remember to mention Freedom Rings, and thank you for your support.
The Ron Paul Revolution is alive, well, and accelerating. People from all ages and walks of life have rediscovered freedom and its greatest modern champion, Congressman Ron Paul. As a result of Dr. Paul's campaign for president, many people are choosing opportunity over fear, peace over war, prosperity instead of crippling government debt, honest money instead of rampant inflation, and freedom over stifling regulation. Government isn't the answer. It is the problem. Let's move the revolution forward. Join the Fox Valley Freedom Coalition at our next meeting to advance the Ron Paul Freedom Revolution. We meet at Empty Barrels, 98 West Main Street, which is Route 72, just west of the Fox River in West Dundee, on the first Saturday of the month at 5 p.m. For more information, call Jared at 224-402-8148. That's 224-402-8148.
Hi, this is Kenneth John of Freedom Rings. Join me every Monday morning from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock for a spirited discussion of the issues of the day. Are you sick of the same tired positions the liberals and conservatives make? Check out A Fresh Perspective on Freedom Rings, Monday mornings from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. Right here on AM 1410 WRMN. Give me liberty or give me death. All right, we are back with Freedom Rings, and we're going to be talking to Dr. Paul Hines shortly. He has written an interesting column in on LewRockwell.com, and that's LewRockwell.com on the bailout. And who's going to pay for it, and who should pay for it? And this should pose, I think, to be very interesting. He's got an interesting viewpoint on this. It's one that begs the question about all debt, actually. And Dr. Paul Hine is on. Great. Dr. Paul Hine, welcome to Freedom Rings.
Thank you.
I read your article on LewRockwell.com, and it intrigued me, and it kind of reminded me of the situation we have in this country, not only about the bailout, which you talked about, but debt in general. Everybody is crying about we're going to have to pay for this huge multi-billion dollar bailout, almost a $1 trillion bailout, probably be more before it's over, and that our children and our grandchildren, great-grandchildren will have to be paying for this. What's your view on that?
Well, I wonder why we have to pay it. To pay the taxes to support government, assuming that you want to do that, is one thing. But to be taxed by the government for the benefit of banks or private corporations of any kind seems to me to be way beyond any legal justification you can possibly think of. And when I wrote the article, the thought in my mind was, why doesn't anybody question the legality of this? I mean, by what possible law can people who are supposedly free be forced to pay the bills of insolvent corporations? That just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Doesn't make any sense to me either, and I grant your point on vis-a-vis people right now paying for it. It seems to me there's no constitutional justification.
I suppose the other side could say that through the democratic process, we have agreed collectively to pay for this sort of thing, which, I mean, I disagree with. But even more fundamentally, it seems to me, this country was founded on the concept of no taxation without representation. What representation do our children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, not even born yet, have in the decision to bail out, as you say, a group of bankers and corporations generations before they were ever born?
Well, yes, that's exactly the question, and you don't hear it raised by any of the candidates, either local candidates or national candidates, but the idea that our children can be indebted, as you say, before they're even born by a group of strangers is just so preposterous. It's frightening to think how far we've come from the ideas of the Founding Fathers.
It's absolutely preposterous, and so, of course, it kind of begs the question of not only about the bailout, but of all debt, all government debt.
Yes.
It seems to me, on its basis, if it forces through the force of the gun through government for future generations to pay for the profligacy of previous generations, it is just so outrageous.
Yes, and it's not only the profligacy of previous generations, which would be somewhat understandable if they were your generations, but to pay for the wild excesses of government carrying out functions that aren't constitutional in the first place.
Right.
It's kind of scary, and as it was going through my mind as I wrote the article, obviously the government feels that it can do whatever it wants, and it doesn't need to justify it, and it simply puts its hand out and demands to be compensated, and shockingly, the people, I guess, have gotten so used to doing it that it never occurs to them to raise the question. They just say, well, we'll have to do it.
I remember reading a bit of propaganda from the Federal Reserve decades ago, which tried to justify debt, and it was called Two Faces of Debt.
Yes, I know that.
And basically its point was that, just because generations didn't have a say in how the money was spent, they're enjoying the benefits of the roads, all the infrastructure that has been developed in the country because of the debt that was raised in order to pay for all this infrastructure. How do you respond to that?
Well, the debt that they're talking about is our money. I mean, money today as a substance used to pay debts doesn't exist anymore. Instead, it's all bank credit, which is a loan at interest. The first people to get their hands on it do indeed benefit from it. I mean, when the government sells bonds and uses the money to build bridges and roads, why, the bridge builders and road builders sure get the benefit of it. But the retirees, by the time that money filters down into their hands, it's become worth considerably less. So we're building this debt on the backs of people who've retired, you might say.
Absolutely. And you're right. In your writings, you make it so clear how this very mysterious process of money creation, or funny money creation, I would say, happens with the banks. Oh, and why don't you go through step by step what happens? I go to a bank and I want to buy a house, and of course I can't pay for it in cash, so I go there and I get a mortgage for it. How does that money come to me? What does the bank do in order to lend me that money?
You mentioned the two faces of debt. The Federal Reserve publishes a lot of books. There's one little booklet, I forget which of the banks publishes it, it's called I Bet You Thought. And I think one of the things it points out in there is, I'll bet you thought that banks lend the money that's on deposit. No, they don't. Otherwise, the money supply wouldn't be growing exponentially as it is. If you go to the bank to borrow money to buy a house, they simply add the number that you want to borrow to your account. If you want to borrow $100,000 and they agree that you're worthy of that privilege, then they will just add the number 100,000 to your account. There's no transfer of any funds from anybody else's account to yours or from the bank's account to yours. That money is just created out of thin air.
Created out of thin air. They have. How do they get that power to do that? Do you have to be connected to the Federal Reserve System? What if I wanted to start my own bank?
No, you can do that. You don't have to be a Federal Reserve bank to do that. The bank in the corner can do that.
Okay, so I can start my own bank, and I could just start just adding zeros to people's account and say, in a certain amount of time, you're going to owe me this much, that much, and plus more in interest.
Well, you can do that if you could get a license to start a bank, but you, of course, have to have some reserves.
So counterfeiting basically is legal in this country as long as you have a license to do it?
Yeah, the Fed is the official sanctioned counterfeiter.
I wonder if that really sinks into people. I mean, you're making it pretty clear, but I think it's still so fuzzy in most people's heads.
Well,
or so obvious, as you say, it's the emperor having no clothes on.
Yeah. I mean, think of it this way. You go to borrow money to buy a house, and you have to put up your house as collateral. That is to say, real wealth, as opposed to imaginary money that the bank just creates out of thin air. Moreover, you have to give the bank your note to pay them back with interest. And if you don't pay them back, they'll take your house. But really, what you've gotten from the bank is simply, in a sense, the bank's IOUs, because bank deposits, which they create for, are liabilities of commercial banks. And the borrower's notes are the assets. Now, you've given them an asset, your note, and they've given you your liabilities. So if you don't pay, you've simply failed to give your liabilities in return for their liabilities. But until they actually pay their liabilities, which, of course, they'll never do because there's nothing to pay them with, it's hard to see how you owe them anything, really. Since you've given them your liabilities in exchange for their liabilities, it should be an even-Steven swap, but of course it isn't. And that, again, is a question that nobody raises or seems to be concerned about.
And they create this out of thin air, and then when those who get the mortgage don't have the ability to pay it back, now the banks are going to the U.S. taxpayer and subsequent generations saying that this illusory idea of wealth creation that we lost only on paper, only in theory, now we want to be bailed out for that.
Yeah.
See, would it not make more sense instead of saddling, and I agree with you, actually, taxpayers should rise up in revolt to this and not pay it, but you know, land, it's not the land of the free, the home of the brave anymore, it's the land of the meek, home of the slave. We should, there I go again with tangents, and then I forget my main thought. I'm sorry.
The whole housing bubble, when you stop to think of it, has got to be artificial.
Right.
I mean, what else do you buy that as it gets older and wears out becomes more valuable?
Oh, that brings me to my point. Yeah, my point is do we need this bailout anyway? Why can't the banks just recognize the fact and the people to begin with, and that maybe we just have to reorganize these mortgages in a more realistic fashion in concord to what these houses are really worth?
Yes, I think that's a very good point. But if the bank simply said, oh, well, you know, never mind, don't bother paying off your house, just go ahead and keep it and we'll forget about it, people would think something funny going on here, and I don't think the banks want them thinking about it too much. But they could say, we'll renegotiate your mortgage to a level that you can pay it, and some of this debt that's impayable will simply swallow and so forth. But no, they don't want to do that. They want their assets to be just as intact as they were before.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Hine. You're a doctor of what, by the way?
Medicine.
Of medicine. And a frequent writer for LouWalkerell.com. The phone number here is 847-931-1410. That's 931-1410. Any questions about the bailout and debt and money creation in the Federal Reserve is welcome. Give us a call, 847-931-1410. We will be back after a few messages.
Mommy, why do we have a government?
There are lots of reasons, like to make sure we have soldiers to protect our country, to build our roads,
to give us all the things we need.
Well, no, they can't do that.
That's what I heard on TV.
Oh, that was probably just some politician trying to get people to vote for him. Our government is supposed to be limited by the Constitution, but those in government just ignore it. That's why our country is in such a mess.
Then why don't you and Daddy stop it?
Well, we'd like to, but we don't know how.
If you feel like the mother in this message, you are not alone, but there is something you can do. Join us at the next meeting of the Fox Valley Freedom Coalition, a diverse group of people like yourself who are fed up with the status quo. We meet at MT Barrels, 98 West Main Street, which is Route 72, just west of the Fox River in West Dundee, on the first Saturday of the month at 5 p.m. For more information, call Jarrett at 224-402-8148. That's 224-402-8148. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your children.
We reduce children to their lowest common denominator.
57% of us are functionally illiterate.
For us, excellence is a thing of the past.
We killed the teachers and students at Columbine.
We are all trained to follow orders good.
We have learned to be tolerant of all people, except whites, Christians, and males.
27% of us are put on drugs.
The rest of us take the illegal ones. Two-thirds of us believe that from each according to his ability to each according to his need is part of the preamble to the U.S. Constitution.
7 out of 10 of us don't know either of the senators in our state.
We just placed 19th out of 21 countries on math scores, ahead of the Ivory Coast and Sri Lanka.
We elected
George W. Bush
as president and re-elected him.
And 9 out of 10 of us are products of the public schools.
This message paid for by the Illinois Indoctrinators Association.
Ever think that you should be getting more out of your computer? Maybe you need a go-to tech guy. A go-to tech guy is somebody who knows computers inside and out and can help you with yours. John Spazieri is a real go-to tech guy. John Spazieri is a 20-year tech veteran who can help you get more out of your computer. Need email or internet setup and training? Call John. Want to simply learn to do things faster? Call John. John Spazieri comes to your home, works with you one-on-one on your machine, and shows you step-by-step how to do things you've always wanted to do with your computer. Want a new computer system set up? Call John. Need fast, convenient repairs? Call John. Call John Spazieri at area code 630-858-6933. That's 630-858-6933. John Spazieri. Make him your go-to tech guy. I consider trial by jury as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its Constitution. So said Thomas Jefferson. What does this mean? Nothing less than that a juror has more power in a particular case than a judge, congressman, or president, and can judge the law. A juror has the right and power to nullify unjust law by voting not guilty, contrary to the jury instructions that many judges routinely give that jurors must apply the law as given by the judge. This is a very important check on the power of oppressive government. In the past, jury nullification has asserted its historical importance concerning fugitive slave laws of the 1850s, prohibition in the 1920s, and draft cases in the 1960s. Oppressive gun laws, tax laws, and drug laws are other instances where the people through its jury said no to government. For more information, call the Illinois Fully Informed Jury Association at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974.
Watch the police and the tax man miss me.
All right, we are back with Freedom Rings, talking with Dr. Paul Hine about the Federal Reserve and bailouts and debt. And Dr. Hine, what do you say we go to the phones?
Sure, fine.
All right, we have Jeff. How you doing, Jeff?
Good morning. Yeah, my question actually is my concern is Barack Obama's coming out with this tax and everybody over $250,000 or $280,000, whatever it is. Most businesses now, I don't want to say my business or Kenny's business, but some of these bigger housing developers and painters and whatnot, and all these people out there, they have, a dozen people working for them. What do you think that's going to do to them? I mean, he wants to tax the crap out of everybody, and I personally think that it's going to shut a lot of people down. You know, you're going to see the JCPenney's and the Sears and the Walmarts and all that people start, feeling the brunt of his tax shelters instead of trying to fix the way, the rules. Kenny has always said this. You got to change the system. The system is just corrupt.
Dr. Hine?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the system is profoundly corrupt. I think Obama's tax plan, but I can't speak speak with any expertise on this because I haven't been paying that much attention to the campaign since it's a waste of time as far as I'm concerned anyway. But I think his tax plan, his $250,000 limit, is limited to individuals and families. I don't know that it applies to companies or not.
Well, that's the problem. If you're a company like mine, if I decide to go out and hire a bunch of people, I'm being $250,000 a year. Well, that $250,000 isn't going to go completely to me. By the time I'm through, I'm paying for my employees, you know, workman's comp and liability and things like that, you know, and then pay their wages. You're probably looking at $90,000.
Well, in fairness to Obama, Jeff, I believe he's talking about income, not revenue. Why differentiate between he and McCain? It just amazes me, and I imagine Dr. Hines going to agree with it since he thinks even watching this stuff is a waste of time. The Republicans, every election, they get in trouble, and all of a sudden you start hearing the libertarian rhetoric about lowering spending, lowering taxes. Just look at the record. McCain didn't even support that measly Bush tax cut.
Well, I don't support it.
I saw an interesting...
Dr. Hines respond.
I think it's unfair. I think it's unfair. Be honest with you. You know, when I had to pay 20% down to get my house, all right, whose fault did that come up with? Why am I paying for somebody? Because they decided they couldn't get the house at 20%, so they went to a person that could get you no money down. Same thing with loans for cars. I mean, that didn't start coming out here until a couple years ago because people were whining about not being able to afford a house. I mean, I don't see the reasoning behind it. I think it's unfair to people who work their ass off.
Okay.
I mean,
all right.
Maybe I'm getting too boisterous about it or too uptight. But you know, it seems like the people that are hardworking Americans in this country get crapped on every day.
No, Jeff, you made your point. Let Dr. Hein respond.
I think, Jeff, if you're a small or medium sized businessman, you are the target. Of course, it's unfair, and of course, it's wiping you out and. In my opinion, and again, I may be too boisterous, but in my opinion, that's the whole point. It's the middle class that the government is afraid of. The rich are the government. The poor are just cannon fodder, but it's the middle class that has to be wiped out. The middle class does all the work. It produces all the goods. It provides all the services. They could be independent. You know, one day they could wake up and realize, we don't need the government. You know, the government is an albatross around our neck. We don't need the government. So it's the middle class that is and always has been the target of government. So if you think it's unfair, you're absolutely right. It is unfair, and as I say, you're the target. But as far as taxes is concerned, it was something on the Internet this morning. The Republican platform calls for a maximum tax limit of 35%, and the Democratic platform calls for a maximum tax limit of 39.5%. So this is the difference that we're having, the 4.5%, you know. So you're going to get it in the neck either way. It doesn't matter.
What was the Mencken that said that democracy is the art of giving the people what they want and getting it good and hard or something like that?
Yeah, right. But interestingly, you know, the candidate that said he was going to abolish the IRS and do away with income taxes, now that is change. He's like a sigh in the wind. I mean, that's all gone. He's completely out of the picture. I'm talking about Ron Paul, of course.
Right. Of course, but he's not going away, actually.
He
keeps on making appearances, and I really do think you might be more pessimistic, Dr. Hein. I think this is the beginning of a paradigm shift that Ron Paul has started.
Well, I hope so.
All right, let's move on. We have Mike. Hi, Mike.
Morning, gentlemen. My question is more on the currency side of this. We all know we got a fiat currency. They just print it like Monopoly money. They created this all, Jekyll Island many years ago. And it's a house of cards, and it's coming home to roost because ever since we've gone off the gold standard, there's nothing to actually physically back the value of these, notes that they're printing up. And eventually we'll end up like the Germans did in the 1930s where you'll take a wheelbarrow full of money down to the bread store. You're going to get the bread. You'll come out and find the money dumped out on the sidewalk and the wheelbarrow gone because it's worth more than the money that was in it. So
is that where we're headed, Dr. Hein?
I think there are two possibilities. Either we can go the German route, and it's happened in America here after the Revolutionary War. The money became so valuable that the barrel of whiskey was more valuable after the whiskey was out than it was when the whiskey was in it. In other words, the currency was appreciating so fast. And it's happened in virtually every country that's used fiat money. It's happening now in Zimbabwe, where I think the Zimbabwe dollar is certainly like 1 billion to 1 for American dollars. So, yeah, it's built into the nature of the thing, and it's going to happen. The other alternative is that they turn off the money faucet, they quit creating it, and as it dries up, of course, and as debts are repaid, the total money volume then will shrink and shrink, and then we will have a depression. So it's whether we go...
As in the 1920s.
Yes.
With deflationary depression.
That way, the blame isn't so obviously that of the money creators. I mean, when the money becomes worthless overnight, or practically so, then you think, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this money. But if the money becomes more and more precious and scarcer and people can't afford more and more of the necessities of life, then, of course, the blame can be assigned to other people, the producers or the unions or this or that or foreigners or something. So we always have to consider the possibility that runaway inflation may not be the scenario that's planned for us. It may be a depression.
Well, they're trying. It seems to me right now the establishment power is trying to balance it. They're trying to play both sides.
Oh, they're very skillful. I mean, they have walked this tightrope for decades and
right.
Balanced this between hyperinflation and depression, and they've done a magnificent job of it. But as you or your caller termed it, the house of cards, it's going to fall apart right. sooner or later, and I think it's beginning to do that now.
Well, maybe right now we don't have a person in charge of the Federal Reserve as skillful as Alan Greenspan was.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. But Bernanke did suggest at one time dropping the money from helicopters, and I thought that was a remarkable insight that he would say that in public because, you know, any excuse to get money into circulation is so that existing debts can be paid and notes can continue to hold their value and assets can retain their value. Dropping it from an airplane is a good idea. Or buying, you know, as often people complain about the government in its defense spending, will spend $600 for a screwdriver or something. Hey, that's the whole idea, getting the money into circulation any way at all. Since people are reluctant to keep borrowing it, the government has to get it into circulation somehow. So that's one ploy they can use.
Well, maybe instead of sending any kind of money to Washington and through taxes, we do send screwdrivers. Might be a double-edged pun there, too.
Yeah, well, if we did that, meaning you and I and all your listeners and millions of people around the country, of course the government would fold up overnight. All you have to do to get rid of a counterfeiter, for example, is stop using the counterfeit.
Right.
But people aren't going to do that. I've talked about this subject to people for years and years, and I can say there is profound apathy on the subject of our money and its defective nature. And as far as people launching any kind of a rebellion, I know that Dr. Paul talks about a rebellion, and I think he's sincere, and I believe there probably is some sort of grassroots rebellion out there. But until public awareness becomes much greater than it is, hopefully through shows like yours, it's a pretty grim picture.
Mike, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. And Mike Colling, who's part of the Fox Valley Freedom Coalition, reminds me that I need to, you know, let people know that our ad is incorrect. It's for the Fox Valley Freedom Coalition. Second Saturday of the month, we do meet, but no longer at Empty Barrels. Now it's at the Main Street Cafe, one half block south of Algonquin Avenue on Route 31 in Algonquin. Main Street Cafe, second Saturday of the month, 5 o'clock. All right, let's move on. We have Mark. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good. Fine. I had a feeling you might call today.
Well, I always like to call if I can call you. Ken, you still got one of the greatest shows on the earth here.
Thank you.
We better wake up real quick. I'm sure the gentleman agrees with me on that. If we don't wake up, this country definitely is going to have a lot more problems on the line. I was going to ask him, how close do you think we are? You know probably as well as I do, this bailout's not going to do anything. And it's just going to help us. The Wall Street big shots smoke their big cigars and drink their $80 shots. And I was just going to wonder, how far do you think we are from a depression? I mean, they can hold it off for a little while, but how long can they hold it off before we get into a depression?
Yeah, well, that's, of course, a really good question. I don't know. I belong to a group of people here in St. Louis who used to be more active. Now we're sort of somnolent, the monetary realists, and I remember 20 years ago.
Oh, Amos Bruce.
Amos Bruce, yes, Merrill Jenkins, sure.
Yes.
In fact, after Merrill died, they made me president of that group.
Oh, well, great. Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Now I know more from where you come.
Yes, we used to have our meetings, and I remember coming home from those meetings and going into the bedroom. My wife would be asleep, and she'd wake up and say, what's going on? I'd say, oh, we got to buy some gold. It's going to happen tomorrow. You know, things are going to crash tomorrow. And it's been going on for 20 years.
Yeah, we've been saying this since the 70s.
They can stretch it out and stretch it out and stretch out. But when international organizations don't want to take the dollar, for instance, when Saddam Hussein decided he would sell oil for euros instead of dollars, That did it. I mean, he was our buddy up to that point. Then we invaded his country. I think when the Japanese and the Arabs and so forth decide that they don't want to deal in dollars anymore, they're depreciating too fast, that they're going to try something else, that is going to precipitate a crisis over which the bankers aren't going to have a whole lot of control. And, you know, since I have a conspiratorial mind, in the back of my head there's the idea that this is all the way it's planned. Because if we're to have a one-world government, which I think is ultimately what is we're destined for, we need a one-world currency. So if the dollar fails, they can try the AMRO or the euro, and eventually we'll have a one-world currency, and whoever controls that will control the whole world.
Well, there's some notes flying around the Internet that there's actually meetings right now about that very thing, about mm-hmm. having a one-world currency.
Yes, whenever we have these meetings of the G8 summit and all that sort of thing, I wonder, what are they really talking about? I mean, that's something that should be reported upon and never is, of course.
Can I just make one
yes.
point?
Yes.
I just wanted to make one point. Before making the 70s, I agree with you. They've been talking about this. We didn't have a housing market that controlled this country's wealth. And now that that's gone, and it is gone, what else do we have that could make this country build back again? Where we could, what do we make that strong, you know, that obviously the cars and the planes and all that are about ready to go under. What foundation do we have besides the housing market? I don't think there is anything. That's the difference between the 70s and the 80s, and now at least we had something we made. I don't think we make anything, in my opinion, to have strong enough to build back in the economy back, to build it back again. You can't with the housing market. This was doomed from the beginning. You couldn't make it the housing market. But I'll let you answer that question, and I'll get off. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, thank you. Well, we still make an awful lot of goods in this country, probably more than we give ourselves credit for. But, again, as long as the dollar keeps plunging in value and we can get goods made cheaper overseas, that's where we're going to go for it. So it's, again, a monetary thing. We need to return to sound money. As long as the bankers are collecting interest, I calculated one time that the total interest on the public and private debt was something like $1 billion a day. That's not easy to give up, you know. So we're not going to ever return to sound money until we absolutely have to, but ultimately that's what it's going to take.
So things are going to have to get a lot worse before they get better.
Absolutely, and it's going to take an informed populace to do that, and in my estimation, the populace isn't very informed and doesn't want to be informed.
Now, there's a small percentage, I think, who are informed, and yes, the vast majority, unfortunately,
are not. And we talk to each other. Yeah.
But I thought Mark made an interesting comment and your response, too, that we thought back in the 70s, you know, when it's going to collapse. And I think my theory on what happened is that the establishment found a few avenues of somewhat freeing the economy or going more a little bit more towards free market principles that forestalled the day of reckoning, such as opening trade internationally. And such as, although the establishment had nothing to do about this, the technological revolution, the whole computer revolution, I think, forestalled the day of reckoning because that produced some real wealth, I think.
Mm-hmm. Also knowledge.
And yes. And the question is there something else? I don't think any man is, or woman is smart enough to know if there's something else that could do that or not. But
yeah.
Right now it sure does look like the final trick of pony has been played, so to speak.
Well, you know, I'm an old man now, and I can remember I was reading about the bailout of General Motors and Ford and Chrysler. Now, if that doesn't occur, they're very likely to go bankrupt. I remember how, as a child, it wasn't just General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. There was Nash and Hudson and Studebaker and Packard and, you know, the dozen or so cars made here. And while we were familiar with a few foreign cars like Rolls-Royces and Mercedes-Benzes, Japanese cars, I didn't even think there were such things.
No, but not back then. Well, what was good for General Motors was good for the USA, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Hine about the economy and credit and the Federal Reserve, and Merrill Jenkins I'd like to talk about a little bit more right after these messages.
Hello, friends. This is Kenneth John, and Freedom Rings need your help. I would like to get back to a two-hour show, but that costs money. You can help by contributing to the Heartland Institute, Illinois' own libertarian think tank, with a tax-deductible contribution. The Heartland Institute is an independent, nonprofit research organization in operation for 17 years. Joseph Bast, Heartland's president, is a frequent guest on this program. 90% of what you contribute to Heartland comes back to Freedom Rings to pay for this ad. By contributing $25 or more, You will receive monthly publications including School Reform News, Environment and Climate News, and The Heartlander, the Heartland Institute's monthly newsletter. So please call 312-377-4000 to contribute and be sure to mention Freedom Rings. That's 312-377-4000. Or you can contribute by credit card on the internet by going to Heartland's website at heartland.org. Again, remember to mention Freedom Rings, and thank you for your support.
You get what you pay for. Efficient, high-quality service from Perfect Painting and Decorating. In business under the same name since 1975, Perfect Painting and Decorating supplies superior service for both interior and exterior painting, decorative finishing, wallpapering, plastering, drywall and taping, and wood refinishing. For your decorating needs, Perfect Painting and Decorating can custom tint right on the job site. Imagine no interruptions, thorough preparation, professional tradesmen, top-of-the-line materials, meticulous cleanup. Get the job done right the first time. It may cost a bit more for quality, but it's worth it. For a free estimate, call Perfect Painting and Decorating at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974. You'll be glad you did.
I consider trial by jury as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its Constitution. So said Thomas Jefferson. What does this mean? Nothing less than that a juror has more power in a particular case than a judge, congressman, or president, and can judge the law. A juror has the right and power to nullify unjust law by voting not guilty, contrary to the jury instructions that many judges routinely give that jurors must apply the law as given by the judge. This is a very important check on the power of oppressive government. In the past, jury nullification has asserted its historical importance concerning fugitive slave laws of the 1850s, prohibition in the 1920s, and draft cases in the 1960s. Oppressive gun laws, tax laws, and drug laws are other instances where the people through its jury said no to government. For more information, call the Illinois Fully Informed Jury Association at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974. Are you politically homeless? Are you tired of being taxed and regulated by the Democrats and regulated and taxed by the Republicans? Would you like to pursue your own dreams without the interference of government? Well then, America's most successful upcoming party, the Libertarian Party, is your political home. The Fox Valley Libertarian Party is your local libertarian group working hard to restore the freedoms our country once held dear. Yes, you can fight City Hall and win. We did. Find out how. With your help, we will make the 21st century the century of liberty for all. We hold monthly meetings at Baroni's Pizza, 3 Lakewood Plaza, one block west of Route 25 off of Bessinger Drive in Carpentersville on the last Wednesday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m. Call 847-426-1974 for more information. That's 847-426-1974. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
All right, we are back with Freedom Rings, and we're talking with Dr. Paul Hine, who was with the Monetary Realists group out in St. Louis, and I guess Merrill Jenkins was the founder of that?
Yes.
Merrill Jenkins wrote a book. I forget the name of it.
Many books.
He had one, more of like a treatise, I would call it. I would compare it to what Henry Hazlitt did for an Economics in One Lesson, for a lesson on government spending and the seen versus the unseen, is what Merrill Jenkins did concerning the Federal Reserve. He made it really clear, precise, rational, easy reading on a very complex topic. And I had forgotten that name until you mentioned him a while ago. But he never seemed to achieve more than cult status, it seems to me, unfortunately.
No, he didn't. And when I wrote a little book about the monetary situation, and after that I was invited to talk in several groups, like-minded people, actually talking to the choir. But I found that the interest on the subject was very, very, and not only was the interest slight, but people resisted the message. I recall talking at a nursing home one time when one old fellow got up and said that, "You said that we can't redeem our money nowadays, but I redeem mine all the time." And I thought, oh, my God, did I make some mistake here? I asked him what he was talking about. He said, "Well, every time I buy gasoline or go to the grocery store, I'm redeeming my money." And I said, "Well, you're not redeeming your money if somebody who didn't issue the money gives you something for it." But he wouldn't see that point at all. He just shook his head and shrugged his shoulders and said, "I redeem my money all the time." So I thought, well, it's
that's a tough one to get past. What's really happening is you're passing that script over to the greater fool.
Well, sure.
But it's not just fool. It's the fact that it's really backed by the gun of government.
Well, if you get right down to it, yes, that's how the government backs everything.
Yeah. So
the government is force.
Absolutely.
I have a question for Dr.
Sure.
Hine, if I may. Dr. Hine, this is Mike. I'm a producer here at WRMN. I have a question about the economy with a big bailout package that the government has decided to spend over $700 billion to bail out these big businesses. Could you describe to us briefly what would happen if we did not bail out these businesses? I mean, worst case scenario, what would happen to the economy if there was no bailout at all?
Well, that's a good question and a little hard to answer. I'm not really an economist.
Okay.
I think, actually, that very little would happen. The bailout is for the benefit of the really big banks, you know, Morgan Guaranty Trust and
mm-hmm.
Bank and Bank of America. But your little bank on the corner probably doesn't have a lot of bad debts on its books, not so many that it can't handle them and deal with them. So I think although the big boys would suffer, that life would go on pretty much as it has. I think.
Well, the big boys bought up most of these mortgages, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So they were holding all this stuff.
The government strongly pressured them to sell mortgages to people who weren't qualified to borrow money. And then, of course, they packaged these things as, what do they call them? And anyway, they resold these bundles of mortgages to each other and so forth. But I think it's the big banks that would be in trouble, I think.
And it seems to me that even they would just be forced to renegotiate these mortgages
sure.
to more
and
realistic level.
If the big banks go out of business, they just put up a different sign on the bank and a new bunch of people come in, but it's the same old business going on over again.
Yeah.
But the golden parachutes, of course, are there for the fellows at the very top.
The physical wealth has not changed in this country with the financial collapse. It's still there.
No, if you buy a stock for $100 and then you look in the paper and say, ooh, it's gone up to $200, you're not any richer than you were before unless you sell the stock at that point.
Absolutely.
And then if it goes down to $1, you haven't lost anything unless you sell the stock. So a lot of this stuff is just arithmetic. But the bailout economically, I think, is going to have much more serious consequences if it goes through, as it apparently is, than if it doesn't. The government, you know, the first bailout bill failed, and then they got the second one passed. But the second one, as I understand it, went from about a 3-page bill to 400 pages and loaded with pork. I mean, there's a grant in there for the manufacturers of wooden arrows. Come on.
Kidding me.
No.
You're kidding me.
No, I saw that on the Internet twice, so there must be something to it. So, you know, all of the congressmen who righteously voted against it had a little pork thrown their way, and they changed their mind and voted for it. So.
Well, it seems to me as these bailouts keep on building and the income tax can't even support the interest on the national debt, maybe that'll bring us to the point, Dr. Hine, at some point where the people will say enough is enough. And revolt. What we do need is a good old-fashioned tax revolt in this country.
I hope so.
Dr. Hine, thank you very much for being on the program today. I appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, on to the quotation of the week. This is from Frederick Bastiat. When plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves in the course of time a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it.